Good afternoon and welcome to Chatabout. I'm your host, News Director Larissa Donovan. We don't have Kev today, but you'll get plenty of him in the weeks to come. But joining me in studio today is he's the Sheriff of Beltrami County, Jason Riggs. Welcome back to Chatabout.
Well, hello. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you very much. It's been a big week for the county. On Tuesday, the board approved withdrawing the purchase offer for the Wiebolt property as the proposed site for the county jail. Now, you've, of course, being the sheriff, you've been involved in a lot of these, you know, discussions and things. Let's hear from the sheriff about what's next for the Beltrami County Jail project.
Yeah, so we attended, staff attended, along with our county administrator, a Greater Bemidji Joint Planning Board meeting. There was some discussion that they were considering a moratorium on jails being built in the city of Bemidji because they didn't feel that the definition of a government building or a public safety facility encompassed the jail, and so they wanted to basically take this moratorium of about 6 months to determine, you know, what other communities are doing. And some of the staff and members of that board did some research, and our point was is that public safety facility or building encompasses a jail, as it does in some case law pertaining to Hennepin County and another county that were mentioned that way in case law. And so this would have been fairly detrimental to our progress moving forward. But some of those, like I said, some of those staff from the Greater Bemidji Area Joint Planning Board had seen some of the different verbiage in other communities that they had looked into and decided to just hold the moratorium on residentially zoned neighborhoods, which for us that was... It wasn't optimal, but at least it kept us being able to move. And so we are now looking at non-residentially zoned properties in the city of Bemidji.
So that would be like commercial zones, right?
Commercial, industrial, multi-use.
Okay.
Yep. So, and then obviously we have to stay away from the R value, the residentially zoned areas.
Right.
We are definitely being monitored by the Minnesota Department of Corrections. As soon as that letter that came to us said moratorium, the DOC was very actively looking like, so are you guys being paused? I took that as, if this is the case, we're looking at shutting you down.
Ooh.
Yeah, so, and shutting us down would be very detrimental to our community.
It would, because we'd have to house all the inmates out of county.
Correct, at a significantly higher rate. A lot of liability coming with that, with moving people, you know, over the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we currently do anyway, because even this morning we're housing 69 people out of county. So, I mean, that's bringing them back and forth to appointments, bringing them back and forth to court. It gets expensive.
You know? I imagine. And how much does the county currently spend on out-of-county inmate costs?
Right now, we have a couple of contracts that we're holding inmates at $60 a day. But by and large, the state average is $65 a day, which we are spending. And that just is the housing cost. That doesn't include our transport to and from. It doesn't include fuel. It doesn't include the deputy's time to go back and forth. So, I mean, it
adds up.
Yeah. we looked at our average daily population combined. If we had to house all of our inmates out on an annual basis, it would be somewhere between $4 and $5 million just in housing costs, what we figured, and transportation. You know, and then those folks aren't getting services in our local community. You know what I mean? They're not, their family members aren't local.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it gets a lot more difficult when it comes to having contact with them, having, you know, being available for court and the support resources that go along with it. And then they're not getting our programming. You know, we've got
and award-winning programming going on.
Yeah, absolutely. We just got an update from Sanford that we are going to be going live with our Ember program in September. So they've got all of their staff hired. That's going to be inclusive of LADCs, SUD people, mental health providers. It's a very well-rounded and encompassing level of care that we're going to be able to provide to the inmates that we have locally here in Bemidji. And so when we have to house inmates from Beltrami County in other counties, they're not getting that same level of service.
Right, right. And the new jail facility would be larger than the current one, have more beds than the current one, but you should be able to staff it better.
Yes.
Because of the sight lines and things like that?
And there's a little bit of contention out there about why do we need to build it, you know, 242 beds. And I would like to explain that a little bit just because I think there's some misconception there.
Right.
Currently, right now, if you took our current average daily population, if you brought all of our inmates back to Beltrami County, that's 140 inmates. The Department of Corrections says you need 190 beds for the 140 people so that you have flex capacity is what it's called.
Right.
I have to classify inmates, and we have to do so where I don't put nonviolent inmates with violent inmates. So that's why we need that extra space. It's not so we can fill that extra space up. We can do some of that with like certain circumstances, but it's not designed to hold that many people. So that's today's numbers, right? 2023's numbers. We need 190 bed spaces. It's not unheard of to think of that in 30 years from now, we are going to need 242 beds. That's only 50 additional beds, roughly. You have to plan for the future.
Right, especially with a jail that probably will have a life of about 30 years, right?
Right, right. And some of the things that you just said a little bit earlier, so to staff it better, we also have to take a look at, you know, I get the question, why don't we build it up? You need such a bigger footprint. Why don't you build it up? When you build things up, you need more staff to run that facility.
Mm-hmm.
In a long-term setting, when you get... that's the problem kind of we're dealing with right now. We've got one complete floor of our jail that's shut down because we fiscally can't afford the staff for it. And then finding staff, you know, the world
it's,
right.
It's not an easy job in there.
It's not. It's not an easy job. And as you know, there are worker shortages all over this, you know, the country from mm-hmm. what I've been told. It's not just Beltrami County. It's not just the state of Minnesota. And this is a projection that's looking at 10 years. So, I mean, we have to be responsible when it comes to staffing this as well, because we don't want to, you know, if we build a 242-bed facility that's up and we need, you know, 20 employees a day to run it, that's not cheap either.
No.
We have to look at being fiscally responsible with getting the best bang for our dollar when it comes to, you know, staffing it. And it's a lot safer. The current facility that we have is so staff intensive.
There's so many blind spots.
Exactly. And people say, well, why can't you use cameras? We physically have to have eyes on every inmate on a special watch every 15 minutes and on a regular watch every 30 minutes. You can't use a camera to do that. So we physically have to make sure that our inmates are being, you know, are sound and secure. And so we have to have physical eyes on. So that's where we can't, you know, we have to, not that we won't have cameras, but we can't utilize that technology.
It doesn't replace a person.
Correct, yep.
All right. Well, that is, so the county is still hoping to pursue a local option sales tax to fund the construction. What does the kind of uncertainty about, you know, the site location at this point, what do you think that might do for the potential success come November?
Well, I think a lot of people are, you know, I've talked to many people and they all say, oh, we know you need a jail. We know that this is an issue. I think not having a location picked out kind of leaves a lot to be desired for a lot of people. You know, there were 130 plus people over on Jefferson there that were, you know, very concerned about a jail going in their facility. And I think a lot of people would be in the same boat, you know, now that we are moving off to having to look at
commercial,
industrial,
uses.
And multi-use, that's going to, you know, definitely not impact residential as much. I mean,
right, but commercial property usually costs a lot more than residential lots.
Correct. Yep. So there is that, but to keep this project moving forward, we are now looking at those areas, and we're hoping that. We went back to the drawing board when it came to looking at properties. We included some additional neighborhood impact stuff in our scoring. We took a look at the scoring criteria that we were currently using, and we've, you know, kind of adopted that to that. We've added some additional properties based off of some suggestions by the community through some of those public hearings. And you know, right now we're looking at, like I said, those commercial areas. And so we are hoping to have a property identified and be in like some type of contract prior to early voting, which I believe is mid to 20 something September.
Something like that.
Yeah. So early voting starts. And so we would like to have, you know, something identified by that time. And then, you know, moving forward, I think there's some additional concerns or some additional, like, what is this going to do to impact us, you know? And so the local option sales tax is an option that we have. We are still seeking, we still have two federal requests in through the federal government. We are going to be looking at trying to secure some bonding in January. Because it will be a bonding year for the state. And so we still have those options on the table, but we have to have a backup plan. And if we don't pass the local option sales tax, the entire jail will fall on the property owners of Beltrami County.
Oof. And that's like, what, a 30% hike for 30, and that'll stay up there for like 30 years?
We looked at it. It's going to be about a 21 to 22% pay or an increase, and that's just for the jail. That doesn't include operating costs for public safety or any other levy increases that the county might have to impose, pending on inflation or...
Ouchie.
Yeah. And we don't, as a property owner payer in Beltrami County...
It's still too high.
It is. It most certainly is. But, you know, if we pass the local option sales tax, we can pass some of those costs on to...
Get regional collection.
Regional collection, exactly. And we looked at, through the University of Minnesota Extension's office... They did a study based off of a current half-cent % that we have currently for road maintenance, and it generates between $4 and $4.5 million a year, depending on the year. So a 0.625% sales tax increase for, and this is just on goods that are taxable,
food, not clothes, and not cars, right?
There are some newer vehicles, you know, ATVs, boats, and stuff like that. That would, but yes, I think cars are exempt from that. So there are some non-taxable goods that it's going to have a lesser effect on people that are already pinched. You know, it's not going to increase your grocery bill. It's not going to increase your clothing, your family bill. You know, so I think it's important that people understand that this will be. Other people will be sharing in the cost of this. And so we're looking at having to generate about $5.5 million a year to pay the bond payments on that facility. And that local option sales tax would do that.
All right.
With minimal, you know, interruption to the, considerably less interruption to the county taxpayers. So.
All right. Well, we've used about more than half our time on this jail thing. And maybe you have other things you'd like to talk about. Before we started recording, you were telling us a little bit about an opioid summit you attended. Let's hear about that.
Yeah. So last week, I went up to Red Lake. There was an opioid summit that they held up there where they had a number of professional speakers come in and talk about addiction and what opioids are doing to the Red Lake community. It was well attended. We had representation there from County Health and Human Services. Like I said, I was there. Minnesota Department of Corrections, Minnesota BCA, Minnesota State Patrol, number of people that are on the service end of this crisis. And to include Red Lake and Leech Lake, I did see the chairman of Leech Lake there, Farron Jackson, and it was just a really, really good listening session that I got to learn some things from professionals in mental health, professionals in the medical field regarding addiction. And we actually got to participate in some roundtable discussion and problem solving. In my group, we specifically had a couple of people that were in treatment for opioid use, and I learned some things that I really wasn't aware of. And some of those things it makes sense as you look at them. Like, you know, you bring somebody who goes into the criminal justice system because they got into some legal trouble. They end up in either jail or prison for, say, you know, 6 months to a few years, and those folks come out and they go right back to using. It's like, it's not just your body detoxifying and not craving it still. There's other factors to it, and I think that's where this was very eye-opening for me, in the sense of, I don't think we're going to solve this overnight.
Right.
But I think, you know, the secretary, Sam Strong, and I were talking, and he's like, Jason, he says, we know that this isn't going to happen overnight, but the collaboration of coming together with, from a perspective of the community versus just, we're going to try this and we're going to try that. And we've been trying to deal with this from the law enforcement side of it for, you know, a good long time. You know, in my entire career, I've seen methamphetamine. It's not being solved by arresting people.
No.
And so what it's going to take is a community effort to figure this out.
Right. I mean, people recovering from addiction need support systems.
Absolutely.
They need safe places and supporting people, you know, who believe in their sobriety so they don't fall back to those old friends and those old habits.
Absolutely. You know, I've sat on treatment court on the DWI side of things for a number of years now, and I've seen the successes from that treatment court, and it comes down to a multi-pronged approach where you're focusing on the mental health side of it. You're focusing on the chemical addiction side of it with counseling. Peer support, peer accountability is huge. And then having the aspect of supervision involved. So you have probation and law enforcement that are going out and conducting random tests. But that alone isn't going to work. You still need those other support mechanisms to make it successful. And I think that's why our DWI court is so successful, is because it's an overall commitment from a lot of different people involved in a number of people's lives. Drugs are a huge problem, and they are a huge concern for not just our community, but we directly see those impacts in our community because we have loved ones. We know people that
children in foster care.
Absolutely. I mean, there is so many things that go into what we see when it comes to drug use, you know, property crimes, things of that nature that get people into trouble. You know, we do need to deal with the dealing side of it. You know what I mean? But that alone isn't going to stop.
Right. As long as there's demand.
Correct. So what I would like to say is, you know, we're going to just solve this problem with the snap of a finger, but that's just not realistic. And so what we need to do is just come together as a community and figure this out. And if, you know, with Red Lake talking about what they want to do and us being a part of that, I think that's great collaboration. And I think we need to get other communities on board and work through this issue. And this is something that I think as a society, I think that we could have an impact on if we put our minds to it.
Absolutely. Well said. Well, Jason, is there anything else you wanted to share on our last chat about together?
Yeah. Hey, you know, we're getting close to August. We're getting close to, you know, the end of the summer. Be careful always. You know, we've had a really nice summer as far as like our fair weather people are.
Right.
We're not Phoenix, but still take care of yourself, you know, making sure that you're being safe and responsible and enjoy what the community has to offer. This is a great community with a lot of different things going on, a lot of different events, a lot of different stuff. Before you know it, it will be gone and it'll be back to the grind of the school here.
Thanks for that reminder. Well, yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sheriff Jason Briggs.
Thank you.
I'll be back to wrap up today's show and to preview tomorrow's in just a moment.